I'm joined on the programme by historian Dr. Joe Kelly. We're talking history. Good morning, Joe.
My Gene, why you good, Greg? Is luck day, Shakta. Good morning to yourself and all in Highland Radio.
It's great to have you with us. People love hearing from you, Joe, in this regard. And today we're going on a county-wide tour, no less, of Donegal through the eyes of letters written in the mid-1830s. And we'll get to look through the window of pre-famine Donegal. So this goes back to the Ordnance Survey of Ireland, and that's our source material, is it, Joe?
Yes. Well, what happened basically in England, they started to map England at a very fine detail, 6 inches to a mile. And the idea was to figure out what everybody owned so that they could tax them. And so they transported that system into Ireland. We were under the control of England at the time. And they decided that this would be the way that they were able to tax people to pay for the workhouses. The workhouses weren't opened until 1843. And the British system was that local areas would pay for their own poverty, so to speak. And they would do that by taxing them. So each workhouse would be funded by the... So Glenties electoral area would fund the Glenties workhouse, the Milford electoral area would fund the Milford electoral area, Dunfanaghy be funded by the Dunfanaghy Clonmany area. This was the system that the English adopted. And to do that, they needed to map everywhere. So they sent sappers and people over. It was very much a military organised effort by Thomas Crawley. He was the head man at Head Royal Engineers. And he, with a team of people, came to Ireland and start mapping Ireland. And this is the maps that we used up until digitalisation and satellites and so forth. So it was really, really advanced. And very interestingly, Sleeve Schnachten in his own, in order to get levels and heights, what they did was Thomas Drummond was a gentleman who figured out limelight. If you added lime into light, it made it brighter. You know, people get the expression standing in the limelight. They want the brightest light. And he discovered by adding lime to light, it made it a lot brighter. So they shone a limelight from Sleeve and Snacht, and they were able to see this in Belfast. And this then was the way they were able to measure the angles, and they used Sleeve Schnacht then, whatever height above sea level, and then they went mapping Donegal subsequently with that. Wow. So it was very, very elaborate for its time. And the way they did it, the engineering was just phenomenal. So this man, John O'Donoghue, what we're talking about today, and it was...
John O'Donoghue or Donovan?
Oh, sorry, John O'Donovan. My apologies, John O'Donoghue. John is an author, a great Irish author. Annam Cara, that great series trilogy.
Don't try and get out of it with knowledge, Joe. You got his name wrong.
Sorry, it's just, maybe because I'm reading his book or something.
I'm only joking, Joe.
Okay, John O'Donovan. And he was born in Kilkenny, in a lovely place called Achity Moor, the place of the big house. And he seemed to start off his own wee hedge school. He was born in 1806, so by 1822 he was running his own head school. He decided that he would go to live with his brother in Dublin, and he was considering at the time priesthood, but he didn't go that way. And he ended up, while he was in Dublin, meeting with some famous scholars who really put him on the road towards becoming a very educated man in the Irish language. And you've got to remember at that time there wouldn't be too many people scholars of the Irish language. And one of the people that he happened to meet was this man who was later to become the secretary to the king's man in Ireland, the Lord Lieutenant. And his name was Thomas Larcombe. And he wanted to learn Irish. An English man wanted to learn Irish. And he was told this John O'Donovan would be an excellent man for to do that. And then later on in his life, some years later, they were looking for someone. It was a brilliant idea that not only were they going to map all the places of Ireland, but they needed to send somebody out that would add in the place names. And so people often think that the English were very much anti-Irish or Irish language. This was an amazing idea. Mm. And the brainchild of both Thomas Colley that did the maps, the engineers, and also Larcombe, to get someone to go around the whole of Ireland. And so they employed John O'Donovan.
So his exclusive job was it to go into the various areas and to ascertain the names, the spelling of the names. That was his... And also to, right, because this is probably going to get into this area, was it to sort of take a name and it being in Irish, or was part of his job to anglicise it, to make it into yes. English. That so this go a lot of the stuff we've talked about and the defacing of science and all that type of stuff, we can trace it back literally to an individual who would have been responsible for the anglicising of some of these names.
Absolutely.
Wow, what a remarkable window into history.
History. And so what he did is he travelled around Ireland, taking maybe names that were said in English and putting on the maps, but then explaining what they meant. So he worked with the Ordnance Survey from about 1831, around that time, to 1842. So for almost, 11 years, working, travelling the whole of Ireland, mapping, I think it was roughly about 63,000 place names that he logged, as well as about 144,000 just other general names.
And what do you think the criteria was in terms of, maybe not drilling down to townlands, or perhaps he did? I wonder what sort of the... how detailed, like, say, for instance, in my house, Germanus Glebe is there, Mullen of Sol is there. I wonder, would he have got down as deep as to those townlands, or would it more be Lahey, Mount Charles, Donegal Town, Ballybofaster, and all, or so on and so forth?
Well, it varies. Like, he left 137 volumes of letters, and the only counties that he didn't do were Cork, Antrim, and Tyrone. So he came into Donegal, Derry, all the other counties. And as he moved around, he obviously did the general place names and the main place names, but if he was in an area, he also focused in on other names as well and made general comments about it. But it wasn't even just that. You see, you've got to remember at that time, it was pre-famine, as you pointed out, and it was a window into pre-famine Ireland. And it was, an understanding of an Ireland that was going to change utterly by 1847, within 15, 16 years. But what he did was he also, when he was going around, noted historical people, events,
really?
Places,
wow.
Manuscripts. And the English were very much, particularly back, Petrie, who he'd be right to. He'd write letters every 3 days. So he was kind of 3 days behind, and he would write letters as he moved around explaining what he did in the previous 3 days. And he would maybe spend 18 hours a day writing when he would stop after 3 days and write down who he'd met and what he'd learned.
Was this driven by himself, or do you think a requirement of what he was doing?
Oh, look, he was getting paid very, very pittance for what he was doing. And he talked about how he moved around into in Dunfanaghy. He was complaining about the damp beds and how bad the weather was and things like that. So he obviously physically endured a lot. And he did get sick a few times from colds probably and flus. But it certainly wasn't for the money. And later on, he became a professor in Queen's. And he also, between, I think it was 1848 and 51, he put out various volumes of the Annals of the Four Masters. They were the first production of them, an Irish version of those, modern Irish at that time. Mm-hmm. So look, he became a great, great scholar subsequently. But I think that he was just a man that understood the soul of Ireland and understood the language and was in the right place at the right okay. time and love on a graph for it.
So, and the best thing, because you're across this, is for you to start picking out notes of interest for us here in Donegal, but just in relation to this body of work, is it preserved? You know what I mean? Is there an archive or of his letters, the Fields notes that you reference? I mean, are those physically stored somewhere in his handwriting? Are they accessible? Oh.
Yes, they are. Some of them are digitally online if you go looking for them. There was a wonderful book printed in 2000. That's where I became familiar with them. The Ordnance Survey Letters of Donegal are done for every county. People would have published them. And it's the Four Master Press by Michael Herity. So there's a beautiful, beautiful publication done for Donegal. But they are online and they're in the Royal Irish Academy as well. That's where the original letters are.
Yeah.
Joe Kelly, of the same name as myself, a librarian with the Donegal County Council. Actually, I had been chatting to him over the weekend. We were just chatting about the letters, and he'd said that he'd actually gone to see them, and he sent me some screenshots of his own family. People are mentioned in it.
Oh, wow. Okay, listen, I don't want to run out of time on this, okay? So we're talking about, this is from the 1830s, John O'Donovan, as part of the creation of an Ordnance Survey map, he was charged with going throughout the country and writing down place names, townlands, and all that type of stuff. So we do know what he said about certain areas. So he was in Inishowen, We'll go down this way, if you like, because I find this fascinating. So what does he say about his journey through the peninsula or parts of the peninsula, Joe?
Right, well, there's a massive amount of historical information in his letters. I found his observations and his comments very, very interesting. So I hope I don't offend anybody as we transverse.
These are the words of John O'Donovan, not of Joe Kelly.
He talked about going to Carindona. So he started off in Donegal at the beginning of August 1835, and he ended up in November, started off in Carindona, Moville, Carindona, and then moved through Donegal westward and ended up leaving Donegal, Ballyshannon, in about November 1835. So that's his journey that summer through Donegal.
And come on, Joe, get to it.
He goes to... now, please, I have to be very
Joe,
careful.
Please, this is the words of 1830s John O'Donovan. Go on.
And he goes to Carindona, he says... it is curious to observe that all the Aboriginal inhabitants of Doa Parish are McColgans, who are numerous in the surrounding parishes as well. So he was calling them Aboriginals up there. And he talked about being in Buncrana. And he said, Clonmany is the most Irish parish I have ever visited. The men only who go to markets and fairs speak a little English. The women and children speak Irish only. And he talked about, I've never heard Irish better spoken nor experienced more natural civility and innocence than the very secluded and wild parish. So he's talking...
That's good. That's positive. Yes. Then he moves westwards to the Fannin Peninsula through Rathmullen into Carrigart. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. And he talks about why Rathmullen is just divided by a narrow peninsula of only an arm of a sea about 3 miles in breadth, yet the natives of Fannin look upon themselves as different people. They speak of the Anishonians as debased and demoralized people. Such is human nature. And yet the men of Anishon are of the two the most estimable. So there you go. I shared that with Nicholas Crossan, and he says we'll have a pint on that one. So the Fannin ones were looking down on the Anishonians.
Right. What did he say about Carrigart? Have you got that in front of you?
He talked about Carrigart and how he stayed in a comfortless lodging in the house of a Mr. McFadden. I think that's Father McFadden of the Great Land War. I think that might have been his father or that family. He talked about the Fannin people, and he was saying that they were the chiefs. They were brands. What is it? Fiery brands, glowing and unextinguishable. Support of the valor of the Gaels, champions mighty of two force. Their way through the gap of danger, and illustrious for their extravagance in distributing jewels and wealth. So the Fannin people were very, very generous.
Okay. You mentioned Dunfanagh. He is wet, damp lodgings. I think that was how you described them. Unless there's anything of note, he then went towards the Falkara, Gorta Hawk area.
Yeah. Well, as he was in Dunfanagh, as I said, he was about 3 days behind. And he talked, it's a very sad story, he talked about the McSweeney na Dua. And he had met MacSivney, the descendant of Doe Castle. And as he looked across the sand, he could see this man walking very tall and stately with three women and some children, accompanied by a hampered ass and greyhounds and dogs. And he says, who is this man? And he found out that he was the real MacSivney. And so he went to his house subsequently, and he arrived to the house and the father wasn't there. And he went in and he saw two fine sons playing the bagpipes and the fiddle. And that's the family of Turla MacSivney, the famous piper that was in Gador in subsequent years.
Wow.
And who claimed that his family were the people of Doe Castle. So he talks about that, and he goes in and he salutes him as the MacSwinney of Doe, and the Lord of Torry. And taking my hand, he returned the salutation and he became the representative of his race. So it was a passing time of the old Gaelic order. He went to Dunfanagh then, and he stayed in the hotel there. And he says, I am sick to death's door of the names of the coast, because I get one version from one person, then it's corrected, and somebody of equal intelligence gave me another version. He wanted to go to Torry, but he didn't get there. And then he went up into Garden. And I'm glad to say, when he left Clonmany, this is what he spoke of going towards Garden. En route was through the wildest tract of country I ever saw. We could not meet a single intelligent man. In fact, no man, no house. So I don't know if that is as fair to say.
He must have went a different route. So if you could just talk to us a little bit about Dunloe and Glenties, because we're right up against 11.
Okay. Well, he just says on Dunloe, he visited on the 12th of October 1835, and he talks about it being wild and so thinly inhabited as the region through which we have wandered since I last wrote. It is sublimely barren and at night poetically gloomy and horrible. But he says, O boilless sweet country of the boils, wert thou ever civilised? The mountains not know. So that might explain why I'm over here in the Rosses trying to just educate them, you know, and their mountains not know.
Jimmy, if you work cut out. Glenties and then into Ballyshannon, I suppose.
Before I leave Dunloe, he stays in this place called the Head Inn, and he says, I am weary to death's door of the noise and interruptions of drunken fishermen at the Head's Inn in Dunloe. So he was getting
amazing.
Annoyed.
Amazing. This is the 1830s, folks. This is a gentleman who stayed in Dunloe in the 1830s. So can you imagine your ancestors all loaded after coming in off the fishing boats in there, all rowdy, drinking their beer? What an amazing picture he paints there. Sounds like fun.
He heads them to Glenties. Now, this comes with a big caveat. The ancient families here can be distinguished by their forms and features. Now, here we go. The O'Donnells are corpulent and heavy, with manly faces and aquiline noses. The O'Boyles are ruddy and stout, pictures of health when well fed. The McDevitts are tall and slender, with ray visages. The O'Dohertys are stout and chief-like, stiff, unbending, stubborn, most degenerate in their peasant state, but all have good faces. And then finally, the McSweeneys, spirited and tall, of pale and ray colour. Among them all, the O'Boyles and Doherty are by far the finest human animals. So up to the O'Boyles and up to the O'Dohertys.
There you go. And Ballyshannon, Ireland's oldest town?
Yes. He went through Ballyshannon and he met Edward Quinn there, who gave him a terrible lot of information and all the place names there. And then he exited the county. So for anybody who wants to see these letters in respect of their own areas, they're online if you go Googling for them, and you'll find them. And maybe just to end with you, I'm sure you're very well aware, and your listeners, of Brian Friel's play written about translations, and translations basically about the place names. And I imagine he got the idea from John O'Donovan, the letters. And it starts in this little town in Donegal called Ballybug, the little town. And they're translating the place names. So Brian Friel's drama, in a way, is drawn out of the history of these letters. Wow. And again, it's just a wonderful thing to have, and it gives a great insight into the Ireland that was.
All right, Joe, you've done it again. And there's more in that we could have dug into. I will actually get back to you on it. Joe Kelly, Dr. Joe Kelly, thank you so very much indeed for that.